Party Spirit has pinched the Oaks by 4 lengths. But a champion becomes a legend. Maccabi Deaver has won it.
It's Cox Plate Week on .com and the Den Mondays, but we're looking a little bit back to kick us off at possibly what has become the biggest race day of the year, given the significance of the races in both Melbourne and Sydney. I'm Roger Aldridge. Richard Urban from Wolf Den is here as well. And Rich, not in your usual den this week, but how can you not love that double as a racing fan?
Yeah, it is the best day of racing of the year. I had a good think about it. And that those 3 hours from about 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock at night on Saturday, just incredible racing. Every 20 minutes is a race that has so much interest. Fantastic day racing. I absolutely loved it. So much to talk about. And yes, I am in a slightly different environment. I've made it the big time. I'm at .com offices in Melbourne. We're doing a bit of filming down here. I'm going to film a Geelong Cup set with the great Ben Ascari later on this afternoon. So I thought, why not film .com and the Den Mondays actually from .com?
All right. Well, let's get straight into the Straight Six.
The Straight Six.
I don't read the papers very often, but I really hope someone went with the headline Coffee Cup when it comes to Harry Coffey's victory aboard Duke de Cessa in the Caulfield Cup. A nice win upstaging Buckaroo, who did run a trip, and that was the big question in the son of Fasnet Rock. Couldn't catch him, though. He actually had some very good form going into the race, did the Duke. Was given a reasonable push by Kieran, but he was winless from five at Caulfield, which certainly gave me some pause. Alas, I didn't back him. What were your thoughts, Rich?
Brilliant win. Interestingly, I saw a story on .com over the weekend that he cost $2 million to buy out of Ireland. So great return on investment for the people who bought him. Caulfield Cup was always his main aim. Kieran Maher didn't nominate him for the Melbourne Cup because he doesn't think he can get 2 mile. And that is where it will stay. He won't go on to the Cup. Maybe Champion Stakes next. But yeah, brilliant story. Harry Coffey. Great story. It's been well talked about in the press. He deserves that success so much. There's also a chance he could run in the Moonee Valley Gold Cup on Friday night too if he doesn't go into the Champion Stakes. So wouldn't that be fantastic? We'll be at Moonee Valley on Friday night. And I'd love to see the Caulfield Cup winner running on a Friday night. I don't think many people would have thought that that was going to happen.
No, certainly not. And if you pay $2 million to get a horse out of Ireland, you bloody want them to win a big race because it takes a lot to get your return on investment. You've got to win one of these big features or you know, go to Sydney and take some of that massive prize money they seem to pop up for maidens up that way. Quite incredible when it comes to Buckaroo, I think, that a Fasnet Rock progeny can potentially go on to our greatest staying test. It's almost unheard of.
Yeah, a lot of people thought Buckaroo probably would have won the Caulfield Cup with a better run. He goes on to the Melbourne Cup. That was confirmed over the weekend. The connections just thought they couldn't pass up the opportunity. He's got 54.5 kilos in the Melbourne Cup. He's going to be a red-hot chance. Arguably the best horse in the race, that Jan Brunel, or whatever the name of that horse is.
Jan Brugel.
Jan Brugel. He's a bit of a freak, apparently. So, yeah, I haven't paid too much attention to the Melbourne Cup form, but it's now time to do that because it is upon us very, very quickly. As I like to do, I like to democratise everything, Rog. So I put a tweet up about Buckaroo to find out what people thought should be the way that Buckaroo should go. Here is the tweet. Got a lot of traction, which is great. So generally speaking, most people want him to go to the Melbourne Cup. What was interesting is a lot of people did say in the comments that he should have gone around in the Cox Plate. I didn't put the Cox Plate there as an option because it was very clear he was not going to go there, but a lot of people thought that would be the best place for him. But we know that he's almost certainly going to go into the Melbourne Cup, and I think it adds a nice dimension to the race, just having a real quality weight for age horse in the race.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll take a look at the Melbourne Cup market as well, because as we can see, Buckaroo does sit as an equal second elect with Vauban, who was the favourite for the race last year. Jan Brugel up there at the top at $6, $13 for Point King, Jamie Carr's ride, Land Legend, who ran on the weekend and also won the Metropolitan at 15s at Absurd, who ran last year, Vauban's stablemate at $17. Obviously, that market's going to be quite fluid over the next 15 days. Interesting by you, Rich, that you managed to pronounce democratise well and nearly stuffed up my name. So at least you're getting the tough ones right. Let's move on, though. Let's move on to the Everest. Bella Nipotina, she is a modern racing marvel. There was a school of thought that it would be the experience which shone through in terms of Bella and also I Wish I Win. Half right. Bella first, I Wish I Win last. She, as I said, is a marvel.
Amazing win, three wide the entire way. Willow decided that he had to ride her that way to give her every single chance, and she's just so tough. That's why she's called Racing's Iron Lady. She'll probably go on to the Russell Boarding, which is the last of that sprint series where there's big bonus money on offer, 1,300 metres. It's the race that she won last year. Her prize money goes up to 19 million, Rog. Incredible amount of money. Yeah, she's free.
Terms of prize money, that sort of puts her, I think, maybe second or third. Winx is first. So she'd be second or third. And you'd think by the end of her racing career, the way she's going at the moment, she'll probably finish as Australia's highest ever money earner on the racetrack, which is quite incredible. She's a horse that I continually underrate. I'm not Robinson Crusoe there, but I seem to never really, I never really back her. And I'd be a lot better off if I did. But what about Giga Kick? I'm rapt to see him back to his best. Stoked for Clayton Douglas. And I'm also stoked for our sprinting ranks because I didn't give him a hope in hell on Saturday. And then there was a bit of symmetry in the way that, you know, Craig Williams obviously rode Giga Kick to his victory in the Everest in 2022. And then it was Craig Williams on Bella Nipotina, which nutted out Giga Kick on the post there on Saturday.
Yeah, bit of vindication for your mate Clayton Douglas. He's been under a bit of pressure, but Giga Kick ran incredibly well. Probably goes on to the Champion Stakes. Clayton said they'd just see how he pulls up and go on the Champion Stakes. The Champion Stakes is looking like an absolute
champion sprint. Kick's going to get 2,000 metres, but I did. I'm not mates with Clayton, but I have a lot of respect for him. When he always returns your phone call, always returns messages, and so in saying that, I did text him this morning and say you're definitely going to the Champion Sprint, and I haven't heard back yet. So you know, maybe I'm off money. That was only an hour or so ago, but
the Champion Sprint. And Sunshine in Paris was very good in the race as well. Because we're doing a bit of content with Annabelle and Rob, I thought that they were thinking that maybe she'd just have a start in the Everest and then go to the paddock. I kind of feel like they've probably got a runner again. I don't think they've sort of achieved everything they want out of the spring. So she could go on the Russell Balding or she could come down to the Champion Sprint. But I don't know, but I will certainly be finding out from Annabelle because she'll come into the den this week and we will get all the lowdown.
Yeah, getting the good oil from an informed stable. The Coolmore's always been considered the stallion-making race, and given they're yet to claim a Group 1 wins in their three-year-old season, despite how good they've been, growing Empire, especially, you know, third in the Everest, second in the Manicato, I can't imagine he or Stormboy will not go to the Coolmore.
Yeah, I think they have to. Neither of them are Group 1 winners yet, and they both need that because they, you know, huge booms on them as stallion colts. So I think that they both have to go on and do that. I, when you go and look at the market for the Coolmore, it's in brackets next to Growing Empire. It says doubtful. I find that very odd, but maybe you're longer going to be really patient with him and put him away till the autumn time. Stormboy, yeah, they've got to run him in the Coolmore. Gay likes to run on horses, so we'll see. But the Coolmore's looking like a brilliant race as well. Traffic Warden, of course, was scratched at the barrier. He'll go to the Coolmore. Yep. Great Everest, mate. Great Everest.
Yeah, it was. Hey, Kieran Maher bags the Everest and a Caulfield Cup in the space of an hour. That's $25 million worth of races. Not all that prize money goes to the winners, obviously. He had a short price favourite in Pride of Jenny in the $5 million King Charles, but there's a new star on the scene in Cheryl Wolf. Unfortunately, we won't get to see him again until next year. And I'm stunned by this decision from Joe Pride. I understand he wants to look after the horse. I also know that he wants to win a Cox Plate. And he is low flying. I'd be setting him to the valley.
Yeah. I was surprised about it as well. There's also the Golden Eagle, which is a $10 million race in a couple of weeks' time. But he's pulled the pin. And so he was a not a bad three-year-old Chow Wolf. Ran second in a Derby or something like that. Or a Guineas. I can't remember exactly which one
he ran
it was.
Second to Riff Rocket in the Derby. So he's had a good three-year-old season.
And then because Joe Pride said he wanted to leave him a stallion because, you know, there's a lot of money in that. If you can make it work, they just decided that to move on from that, they gelded him, and he's just about become the best horse in Australia. He rounded up all the best weight frage horses in our country in that race there and just went straight by them. Joe Pride said that not so much that he's the best horse he's ever had because it's very early in his career, but he's never had a horse that can do what he can do, and he's had some very, very good horses. So I think he's a bit in awe of how high the ceiling is with Chow Wolf. But as you said there, he's going to go to the paddock. Joe Pride said he would dearly love to win a Cox Plate, and Chow Wolf will be his 2025, 2026 Cox Plate contender. Before that, though, their business will be the Queen Elizabeth Stakes at Randwick next autumn. Bring it on.
And what a day of mixed emotions for Joe Pride. He thought he'd lost Think About It earlier in the day when he collapsed in the run with a bleeding attack. And amazingly, in one of the more remarkable, I actually thought he had he'd passed. Like because I was watching on Channel 7 racing and not getting the full picture there, and then I find out that no, he got up and walked away, and so all of a sudden Joe Price he had to retire him, but he's this star horse that he loves dearly hadn't passed away, and then later in the day his next superstar by the look of it, Inchia Wolf comes out and wins that King Charles. So incredible day of roller coaster emotions for Joe. Let's go to Pride of Jenny, though, who it must be said was done no favours by Adam Hieronymus on Major Beale at the start, kept wide from the jump. Jenny's outspoken owner, Tony Otterbrey, lodged a complaint. Now, Stuart said, play on. I have watched it. If stewards have no issue with it, then that's fine. And there's plenty of smarter people than me who also didn't have an issue with it. But don't tell me that it didn't affect Pride of Jenny and her chances at the end, because she was made to do a lot more work at that start by being pushed wide than what she perhaps should have been.
Yeah, well, she got to a race that she didn't need to with Major Bill. My only, I guess, criticism of Declan on Pride of Jenny is that I don't think he needed to stay out there with Major Bill. He could have just dropped back and then hunted across the rail from there. But he got into that, you know, sprinting match really with Pride of Jenny, and it did prove costly in the end. I was okay with it, but I understand why a lot of people weren't.
Yeah, and what about Fangirl? She was obviously second favourite in the race. The one who most people saw as the most likely challenger to Jenny. What did you make of Fangirl?
Yeah, it just seems like she really needs all conditions in her favour. Didn't really set up for her on Saturday. She was a bit disappointing, especially when Char Wolf just went straight past her. So she'll go on to the Champions Mile. I don't think Pride of Jenny will be there, so that'll suit her and she'll be a red-hot chance in that. Other good runs in the race were My Oberon and Amelia's Jewel. I'm a little bit biased towards Annabelle Nation, but My Oberon loomed up like he was going to win. Knocked up to run third, but still a fantastic win. He'll go on to his grand final at Flemington, which is the Champions Mile. Millie's Jewel, really good. She's knocking on the door. She'll go back to a little bit of an easy grade with the Empire Rose. 1,600 metres at Flemington on Derby Day. That'll be her grand final, and I'll be cheering for her loud.
Yeah, I will be too, but she's been knocking on the door for some time, and I'm actually banned from talking about Amelia's Jewel on another podcast that I do, because when she won that big race over in WA a couple of years ago, I said that I'd name my daughter, who was at that point unborn, I'd name her Amelia if she got up, because I'd had such a sizable bet. She did get up. I did name my daughter Amelia. We were always going to call her Amelia. It just was coincidental. Wow, I had a few people fooled. But anyway, so I
was
do have a soft
spot. Was Jewel an option, or was it always Amelia? Because
you could choose a nice name for a girl. You know what? I mean, I'm a child of the 90s, but 80s and 90s. I wasn't a big Jewel fan. She does have, she's a beautiful little girl as well, though. But yes, she's certainly my Jewel, little Amelia. Let's not get distracted here, though, because that happens all too easily on .com and the Den Mondays. Estriella winning the Millennium Sprint. Just speaking of more Kieran Maher runners, Group 2, that's probably her mark at the moment. But she probably should have been beaten. An ounce of luck, and Ray Magnero runs her down. He's getting 6 kilos off her. And I am speaking slightly through my pocket because I was very keen on Ray Magnero's chances.
Yeah, no doubt Ray Magnero should have won the race with a bit more luck, but Estriella did what she needed to do. She won. She's been at Group 1 the last three starts. She drops back to Group 2 and gets the job done. I had a look at her record and compared it to Bella Nipotina. A lot of people are probably outraged that I'm even considering.
I was when you texted me that yesterday.
Yeah, but there's a bit of a point to it. One was that Estrella and another Bella rhymes nicely, and that's always one thing that I'm trying to do. But if you go and have a look at, they're literally exactly the same in that sort of first 10 to 12 starts of their career. And we've seen where Bella Nipotina has ended up. Kieran Maher thinks she's a Group 1 winner. She's going to go on to the Champions Sprint. And, you know, who can doubt what the Maher stable thinks? So be interesting to see what happens in the Champions Sprint and beyond that. And, yeah, look what Bella Nipotina's done. Hey, maybe Estriella will end up there as well one day.
Do you think Bella and Estriella rhyme? They don't. I mean, they don't really. They both end in R.
Bella, Estriella.
I feel like it's a bit of a stretch to say that.
Go and ask your 2-year-old daughter Amelia if they rhyme. She'll say yes. Pretty elementary.
Ah, dearie me, come on. You've got to take. I know you like your alliteration, but I've just got to pull you up on those ones. Let's go to the Silver Eagle, Astraka victorious there, and for consecutive weeks, Blake Shinn probably produces the ride of the day to win a big race.
Yeah, I think it was a very aggressive ride by him. He rated Ostraka perfectly too in the straight. They all came at him hard, but he managed to get him home. He will now go on to the Golden Eagle in a couple of weeks' time. He's risen through the grades pretty quickly, and the Golden Eagle is going to be a very hard race. I think he's about $16 or $17 in that race. Chow Wolf would have been pretty close to favourite because there's some pretty hot international horses in there. We've got Ascoli Pacino in there. We've got Lazart from France. Lazart from is 6 from 6, never been beaten. Ascoli Pacino has form against Oban Buramai. He's beat Oban Buramai, who won the race last year. So it's going to be a really hot race, but I'm looking forward to seeing Ostrak in that along with another. A lot of other Aussie horses. I saw James Cumming announce that Tom Kitten will go to the Golden Eagle as well after his run in the King Charles. So it'll be a pretty hot race on Derby Day.
I can't pull you up for trying to rhyme Estriella and Bella without congratulating you on your pronunciation of those horses heading towards
Oban Buramai.
The Golden Eagle. Well, I mean, even El Pacino and Lazart aren't exactly gimmies. What about the Victoria Derby? It's lost a bit of its luster in the last decade or so, but do you reckon we saw the winner at Caulfield on Saturday in terms of King of Wall Street?
No, but I think Matt Kamani's a great bloke, and I'd love to see him win it. I think probably the riding tactics from some of the other more fancied horses in the race has led to King of Wall Street getting the win, but he will go on to the Derby, and we haven't talked much about the Derby in .com and the Den Monday, so I thought it was time to have a bit of a look at it. Probably what will be pretty instrumental in the Derby form is the races on this Saturday. We've got the Spring Champion Stakes up in Sydney, where you've got horses like Henline going around. Swift Falcon as well, I believe. And then, obviously, we've got the Vase from the Valley on Cox Plate. That's always a big lead-up to the Valley. I think Riff Rocket was favourite in the Vase last year and got beat. Why don't we go and have a look at the Victoria Derby market and have a bit
yeah,
of
well, you've got Broadsiding sitting there at the top of the market at $6. I doubt, though, he will go to
I've
the
never
Derby.
Heard any talk about him going there.
I actually liked Keeneland on the weekend and didn't really run well. But then again, it was very tough to make ground. And, I think he will probably be right at the top of the market when it does come to the Derby. But I've got to be honest, three-year-old staying types aren't exactly my forte in identifying them. Certainly isn't. It's not a race that I take a lot of interest in until Derby Day, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it has fallen away a bit over the years. Other races have come up in prominence, but it is Derby Day after all. So we'll see. Any price a winner, I guess. And at the moment, it looks like there's some pretty big prices on offer if you can find the right one.
Well, if there's not too much interest in the Derby, one thing there is plenty of interest in is the weekly ratings report from our good friend Daniel O'Sullivan. This is probably one of my favourite parts of the show, and no great surprise, again, Rich, to see which horse is at the top of Dano's ratings.
Yeah, there is a little surprise there on the board. We'll talk about that when we get to it, but I'll read them out. Chow Wolf was 104 up from 101.5 in the Epsom. His stamina trait saw him absorb the high pressure on offer from Pride of Jenny over a mile, much faster than the Epsom. Travel better than anything inside the 600 metres and still have plenty to offer over the final 400 metres. Dano gives it the big strong arm as well, strong arm emoji, so he's excited about that. I probably thought it might have rated a little bit higher than that, Chow Wolf, but it is what it is.
Bella Nipotina, 103.5. So not the strongest Everest winner we've seen. Right up there with her peaks over the past 2 years, 103.4, 103.3. Such a well-deserved win for her incredible consistency. It is, however, the lowest rating Everest so far. 105 was the next. 8 horses within 1.9 lengths at the finish.
Moving on to Duke de Cessa, 102.5 at weight for age, 108.1 at the weights. It fits right into the typical range for the Caulfield Cup. 6 of the last 9 years have been between 107.3 and 108.2 at the weights.
Overpass was very impressive at the weekend, I thought, and he rated a 102.3. Now, that's better than his 101.5 that he registered for both his Quokka wins and also Winterbottom wins. So higher than his 2 gun runs in the West.
This is the one that surprised me in the Kosciuszko, far too easy. 101.2 is a big new peak up from 98 when he won over 1,400 metres at Eagle Farm 4 runs ago. So I didn't think that the Kosciuszko was that strong a form line, but it obviously is. It's great to see. It was a great race as well.
Yeah, far too easy. I think it ran second to front page and third to front page over the last 2 years. So vindication, if at first you don't succeed, just try and try again. Let's move on now to Stewards in 60.
Stewards Room Speed Round.
Okay, I'm going to kick off at Caulfield Race 1 Sugarcoat. Post-race endoscopy detected a throat condition that may have affected the gelding's racing performance. Vet clearance required before racing again. Probably headed for a spell, though. Isthmus, who was really well backed in Race 5. Jai McNeil reported the mare may not have been entirely comfortable on the soft 7. Post-race vet showed lame in the left foreleg. Vet clearance required there, too. So, Ramwick, think about it. We've spoken about it now. The vet officer reported that Think About suffered an attack of bleeding but made a quick recovery under vet inspection. Jason Collett was examined by the medical officer, cleared to fulfill his ride engagements. That is one of the more incredible things you'll see on a racetrack. I wish I win. Now, Luke Nolan, unable to provide any explanation for the disappointing performance, he said the gelding was under pressure prior to straightening and did not respond to his riding. Now, the horse has pulled up okay. Moods has put a tweet out this morning. They've done x-rays of legs and hooves and everything's clear. A post-race vet did say 1/5 lame in the off 4, and he has pulled up a little bit jarry in the knees. So he's off to the paddock and all going to plan. They'll give him a prep towards the autumn. And if he shows them that he wants to race on, then he'll have an autumn winter campaign. If not, they will retire him. And Traffic Warden sensationally scratched the barriers of the Everest, sustained lacerations, the off foreleg, a result of that incident. Horse left to undergo a barrier test to the satisfaction of stewards prior to being permitted to race again. That was more stewards in about 120, but we got there in the end. Let's move on.
Cook the book.
Well, the segment's called Cook the Book, but it is not the book that's getting cooked at the moment. It's the punters, Kingsley Bartholomew, Tom Hackett from Ladbrokes joining me now. Kings, it's been a rough spring for us punters.
Yeah, it has. Now, not only are they getting the favourite beat, but they're getting the second favourite beat as well. Both 280, which we saw in the King Charles. So Tom, it must have been an absolute fill up once again.
Yeah, it's another good day for the book, particularly in Melbourne. Punters finish in front in only two of the 10 races in the card. A little bit different in Sydney. Punters fared a little bit better, but now there were some big results that did go the way of the book, but there were some big liabilities. It could have very easily gone the other way. So punters maybe a little stiff for the second week in a row.
It could have, should have, would have. The Everest is probably the biggest futures betting market these days, I imagine, Tom. Did any of the long-range bets land?
Yeah, there was a bit of money on Bella early in futures. We saw with the futures for the Everest this year, there was money for just about all of them that ended up making the field. It wasn't like there was ever one concerted push for one particular runner like we've seen for some of these other feature races this spring. The money was quite spread. So there was a little bit of futures money there for Bella. And she was certainly not unpopular after the final field market. The horse that was really well backed with Ladbrokes was I Wish I Win. There's a few factors at play there. We often see that Peter Moody trained horses in big races are probably overbet with us. We were the slot holder through Trackside Media. So there was a few issues at play there, but I Wish I Win was a monster liability for the Ladbrokes book. And Jolly Star was the other horse that was really well backed with us after the barrier draw. It was a $600,000 liability. And I Am Me ended up being, was one of our worst results going into the race as well.
That must have been Moody on the mic, listeners, Tommy, because we both picked that as a blowout chance on that particular podcast. Hey, Kings, incredibly tough betting race, very open, the most open Everest. Did you play in the race or did you just sit and enjoy?
No, I definitely bet. I was on the winner, luckily, Bella Nipotina, who was a great positive ride from Craig Williams. I took $10 Bella Nipotina. I was also on I Am Mead around the $16 mark. And I had something on Sunshine in Paris during the day at around $9.50 and $9, and she really firmed up. She started around $7 and nearly favourite in the race. But I Wish I Win was a very notable drift around $5.50 out to the $8.50 or $9 mark. You could nearly get there at the end. So it's interesting to hear how much Ladbrokes had for I Wish I Win, even though he was such a drifter.
Is Bella Nipotina the safest bet in racing, Kings? Like, she never runs a bad race. She's always sort of, you know, in the placings generally. Sort of her and Mr. Brightside feel like they're the best each way plays every time they go around. Although Brightside's rarely at each way odds.
You often hear it, don't you? Mare's in form. And yeah, I mean, at the moment, she hasn't missed a place in her last eight starts. But interestingly enough, it took her a time to get going. After 18 starts, she'd only won one race. So at the moment, she's 55 for 10 wins and run a place about 35 times out of the 55. But it took 18 starts. She was one from 18 and then one and nine. She was two from 19. So Mare's in form. Yeah, absolutely. She's always pretty good odds too. She's never too short in the market. $10 in the Everest.
Yeah, exactly. She is. And futures betting used to be such a big thing with the Caulfield Cup, Tommy, and Melbourne Cup. Is it more just a smattering on the Caulfield Cup these days? I feel like people would still play Melbourne Cup futures, but Caulfield has lost some of its luster, it feels.
You know, I think from a futures standpoint, we're still seeing pretty good interest in all the key races during the spring carnival. Roger, I think definitely the Melbourne Cup and the Caulfield Cup aren't as big an outliers as they were from a futures standpoint. They were years back, they were sort of the two races you could get a market on from futures. But nowadays, we've got markets available for basically every Group 1 during the spring and beyond. So you've got a wider range of futures markets to play into. So punters definitely did get involved in the Caulfield Cup markets. We've seen some really strong early action in the Melbourne Cup as well. Punters are definitely this year in the Melbourne Cup seem to be looking to find the locals. At the moment in the Melbourne Cup market with Ladbrokes, the map, probably the local Cinderella story is currently our worst result. And I think that will probably continue. So no, it's futures betting still pretty big, but definitely with those Caulfield Cups and Melbourne Cups, not as big as it once was.
Well, at least you know the map will run the trip. All right, Kings, how did you play the Caulfield Cup and also the King Charles?
Yeah, the Georgie, I backed, I was on Fangirl and I missed the price. So it's interesting. When we did the Saturday set on Thursday, Fangirl was about $4.20, $4. I think Ladbrokes were keeping Fangirl pretty tight around that $3.80 mark, which I thought was a great price at the time, and waited until Saturday morning when I got into the office around 9:30, 10 o'clock. I looked and Fangirl was $3. So Fangirl firmed from $3.80. It looked one person back Fangirl at 7:30 a.m. on Saturday morning, and the bookies turned the price from Fangirl from $3.80 into $3 on the back of obviously one very smart pro punter who'd come in and bet. And that's why it's very tricky now. I can't get any decent money on until 9 a.m. on a Sydney race day. If I want to back Fangirl to win 30 or 40,000, I've got to wait till 9 a.m. on race day. And so you're in a bit of a conundrum. Do you bet on the Thursday and bet to win six thousand, which I can get on with a few bookies, or do you wait? So when it comes time to when you can get some big money down, we saw Fangirl really solid around that $3, came into $2.90 and got back to $3. But there's obviously not as much value at the $3 than there is at the $3.80 or $4. So it's a bit of a conundrum there for pro punters. It just shows how the market is. Back in the day, the betting ring would be a lot more stimulated if that same punter had to come in and bet early, at the 13 to 4, the 4:20, the bookies would have turned the price into $3.80. But they're so well-tuned now that they come into $3 on the back of obviously a very smart punter betting. But in that case, it did save me a bit of money because I halved my bet because I wasn't getting the value that I thought I was going to get. So it goes your way sometimes, it doesn't. But in the long run for a pro punter, it's all about value. And the markets nowadays are just very, very accurate, come sort of 20 minutes out type thing.
Almost as good as a wing for you, Kings. And just quickly, how did you play the Caulfield Cup?
The Caulfield Cup, I had a big go at Buckaroo. I took 480 Buckaroo. I saved on Duke Decessa as well. I wanted to see how the track was playing. I bet, I think, $20 or $18, which I thought was a decent price, but I was happy to wait just to see how the track was playing. And I took $11 or $12 when I saw that you could sort of be on speed and win. Also back Stay Darty at about 16. So I won small on the race.
Tommy, you touched on it earlier, but I'm guessing given the favourite role in the Caulfield Cup and the two favourites rolled in the King Charles, albeit by an emerging star who has its fans, but it would have been a pretty healthy, fat result for Ladbrokes in those particular races.
Yeah, two very, very big results. King Charles was the bigger result. There was that pro support for Fangirl, but all the recreational money was with Pride of Jenny. Outside of I Wish I Win in the Everest, Pride of Jenny's been the best backed horse we've seen in any race so far this year. The hold was 838,000 on Pride of Jenny. Would have been a losing result of over $1 million if she had won the King George. So Child Wolf was an $844,648 winner for the books. Even though he was the third favourite, there was such strong support for Pride of Jenny that Child Wolf was a winning result. Even Fangirl was a very healthy winning result for the book because of that sheer volume of recreational money for Pride of Jenny. We had a couple of monster liabilities in the Caulfield Cup as well. Buckaroo and Zardozzi were both million-dollar losers for the book heading into the race. But Duke de Cessa, despite the fact it was a big firmer, was $21 in a 10, as King's touched on, was still a significant winner for the book of over $500,000. So two big races that the second horses were huge, huge liabilities, but the result went our way. And we do seem to be getting the rub of the green so far this spring from a bookie's perspective when it comes to those big liabilities.
Yeah, rub of the green, that's a very casual way of putting it. You're absolutely dominating. The Melbourne Cup is no doubt the biggest punting day of the year because every man, their dog, their grandma, the sister who's never seen a horse has a bet. Is the Caulfield Cup Everest Day double, because we've got such big racing in Sydney and Melbourne, is that the second biggest punting day of the year?
Yeah, definitely, Rog. It's huge. And it's only growing year on year. Like, these numbers that we've seen for the Everest and the Caulfield Cup are both very, very strong. And I think there's a lot of talk about the interstate rivalry, New South Wales against Victoria. Does it take away from the Caulfield Cup having Everest on the same day and vice versa? But from a punting standpoint, punters just want to see good racing. And when you've got feature racing 25 minutes apart on a Saturday, it's the perfect storm for punters. And we saw that on Saturday. The turnover numbers were very, very strong across both Caulfield and at Randwick.
The overall result, just quickly, overall result Randwick and overall result Caulfield.
Randwick, a small win for the book, but punters, it was looking like it was going to be an enormous result for the book, but punters got a lot back in the last. Well, Lardo, one of our worst results of the year so far, was a well-backed favourite in the last, as we've touched on before, as often can make or break the day, and punters got it right here. $621,524 lose up for the book. That's one of our worst losing results on an individual race this year and this spring carnival. At Caulfield, though, it was very tough going for the punters. As I said earlier, punters only won on two of the 10 races on the card. And the last three races were all significant results for the book. All the last three races were winning results of over $400,000 for the Ladbrokes book. So what's normally can be a happy hunting ground for punters, Caulfield, this spring has been a genuine graveyard.
Yeah, Kings, was Saturday a graveyard for you overall, or did you finish today?
No, I ended up winning on Saturday. I had a good result on Bella Nipotina and found a couple of other sort of winners out wide and just sort of got my nose in front. But it's so interesting hearing the amounts that Ladbrokes sort of stand these horses for, and especially when they're so easy in betting. So you saw in the King Charles, Chio Wolf was officially eight into 650, and I spoke about Fangirl before. Prior to Jenny was about 220 out to 270, with Ladbrokes really leading the way on the price. And also I Wish I Win was a terrible strip out for Ladbrokes. So it's just so interesting how the market's changed nowadays. And it's not money that dictates the market. It's sort of the pro punters really dictate the market, or the marked accounts that really knock the market into shape for everyone else to bet into.
Absolutely. And before we let you go, Tommy, just quickly, are there any long-range bets on the Cox Plate that have got the book particularly worried?
Pride of Jenny and Broadsiding, both very, very popular in future. So as it stands, they're both over $150,000 losers for the Ladbrokes book. I think based on what we saw on Saturday and just what we've seen for the spring so far, I think that there's going to be a large amount of recreational money come for Pride of Jenny. So I think heading into the Cox Plate on Saturday, Pride of Jenny will be our worst result in the race.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us on .com of the Dead Mondays. Let's do it all again next week. And Kings, hopefully we're talking about actually cooking the book this time.
Yeah. Stranger things have happened.
Sneak peek.
Next week, this week, we call it next week. It's actually this week because this is .com and the Den Mondays, and it is Cox Plate week. The Cox Plate is shaping, Rich, as a race of quality over quantity. Probably six runners, potentially eight. Prognosis, the Japanese at the top of the market, via Sestina, Pride of Jenny, Broadside, Mr. Brightside. I'm going to be very interested to see what the market does with Via Sestina with Pride of Jenny in there, because when there's been the hot pace that Jenny's provided, it hasn't done Via Sestina any favours. When Jenny hasn't been there, she's been great.
It's going to be a pretty small field. It might end up being a little bit like the Fian. They're talking maybe six or seven
runners. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'd rather a hot race of six than a crappy race of 12.
Kovalika might even run in the Moonee Valley Gold Cup, which is on Friday night. So that's another thing to look forward to. That could end up being a really hot race. So that's the Cox Plate. It'll be fantastic. We'll be there live streaming. We'll be doing a live stream on the Friday night before, and then we'll be doing a live stream during the Cox Plate day. And we're running a little bit of a mates mode punters pot on Ladbrokes, so you can go and join in that as well. I think we're the most followed community on the Ladbrokes app. I think we've gone past your man, Moods. I was looking the other day. So that
puts a lot doubt of Moods knows he's even on Community. Also, I got the McEwen Stakes, 1,200-meter Group 2, weight for age. There's a likely field there. Also very small, but looking forward to seeing Barrackheel again.
It's a little bit different to last year's McEwen Stakes, of course, the infamous race Gigaki in Imperatriz. That's when Imperatriz really announced herself on the scene. What else have we got, Rog?
Well, I've got the Crystal Mile, a 1,600-meter Group 2 weight for age, which is also a feature on Cox Plate Day. Light Infantry Man, speaking of Moods, Desert Lightning in there. Von Hawk, Royal Champion, Siriello Miss. So Simon Wild with a couple of runners there. Also up this weekend, as mentioned, it's obviously the two-day Cox Plate Carnival. Rich, you've already mentioned the Moonee Valley Gold Cup Friday night, 2,500-meter Group 2. The Vars Spring Champion are also on the invitation from Randwick, as well as some nice horses. Well, that'll have some nice horses like Magic Times, Who Gotcha, and Olentia. So a feast of good racing across two states yet again this weekend, Rich. And as you mentioned, the Den Boys will be trackside at the Valley. So if you are looking to get a different perspective on racing, you might as well tune in for that one.
We're about to run a competition on the Den and on Twitter where you can win 4 tickets into the infield party. I think there's a few thousand people in going there. The tickets cost quite a lot of money, but we've got 4 to give away. So go and get on our Twitter or on the Den, where the competition will be telling us your greatest ever Cox Plate win, and we'll give it to one lucky person. They can take 3 mates along. How good's the great game, Rog?
Oh, it's fantastic. Although it's not doing me a solid at the moment, but hopefully I'll bounce back on the punt. The racing's terrific. The punting's terrible. That's how I'm looking at it at the moment. I'm still enjoying myself. I'd just like to be making a bit more money.
Plenty of time left. Plenty of time left in this spring. I'm very confident that we will all prevail.
Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.